I had Snapchat for a while and I got rid of it. I
You never
couldn't.
took pictures. You just texted on Snapchat is all you did.
I know. I just didn't. I didn't. It's not that I didn't get it. I didn't have a use for it. Like, I just. People sent me photos of nothing.
Hi, and welcome to the episode of Cine Nation. I am Brandon Sparks.
And I'm Ben Gertz.
What was the pause? Why was there a pause?
You can take that out in editing. I live in Portland, Brandon.
And we're back with a vengeance. It's been months. It's been months.
It has been months.
Yeah. Ben yes. and I Ben and I have actually been talking for the past hour and a half before the
Brandon,
actual
it's because
show.
We're friends and we have
yeah.
things to say that we
yeah, yeah.
can't publish
we can't
for
publish.
The world.
Yeah, we can't publicize.
Wouldn't you like to know what we were talking about?
You'll never know.
This is the greatest podcast ever. We're just going to talk about what we can't talk about.
Yeah, we recorded it and everything. So we had a vault, like, or in a, on a,
oh,
hard, a separate
true.
Hard drive. You did record it.
Yeah.
It's, we have.
I
it.
Did. Yeah. Wow. This is dangerous.
This is dangerous. Okay. Anyway, hopefully the hackers they're hacking Netflix right now don't get
Brandon.
This.
Don't bring up my keyword. We have three. Mega topics that hopefully we can still do in an
we'll
hour.
Get to.
The goal is an hour, Brandon.
The goal's an hour. But first off, Ben, what have you been watching?
I watched Don't Think Twice yesterday.
Which is great.
Lovely.
Yeah.
It's a little film by Mike Birbiglia about improv, a little improv group in New York. I've done just enough improv to feel like it hit all of my heartstrings. Yeah, I highly recommend it. It's tightly crafted like a Birbiglia one-man show, but in film form. And it's a great cast, like great performances. Ben Stiller shows up. Lena Dunham has a small bit role. There's just a bunch of like kind of funny little people that show up to make it perfect. So
yeah, and it's not even just like for improv stuff. It'd just be like anyone who's like. Has dealt with film are really that the emotional like the core of it is like anyone having friends that become very successful and you're
sure
and you're not becoming as successful and you're wondering why not me.
Yeah, it hits really universal themes, right?
Yeah.
But like the thing that I love about it is that there's some critical moments like
yeah.
early on, but then there's callbacks to jokes that they do in their short. He does it really, really well, but they have very short little like improv scenes where they show them on stage working
yeah.
together as a group. And they also show the tension of that as like
yeah.
sometimes someone's kind of a stage hog and
yeah.
they talk about it. And it's you know, yeah, I mean, I've never been in a group where we're like really debating to that level,
yeah.
but I totally understand those tensions as you're trying
yeah.
to like give and take on stage like that.
And then just on a basic like filmmaking perspective is like how
yeah.
you show that beforehand. And then when you see the performance, you get a totally different meaning than like if you didn't see that, if that makes sense. Like you don't
no,
see.
No, I think the film is a masterclass in foreshadowing
yeah.
and the ways that he like, there's little jokes that he does as callbacks that have different meanings,
yeah.
especially kind of the like, I can't spoil it, but like, really kind of like the emotional core of the film like is a callback that's set up really early in the film and it makes it all it's kind of the resolution for the entire like
yeah, yeah.
group and it's their little in joke and it
mm-hmm.
and it's just it's really nice because you couldn't write if you tried you know a lot of films just try and write some sort of like little speech that someone gives and this was their little in joke and it's kind of a I mean maybe I'm spoiling it by saying but that there is any of this, but it's worth watching because I think the storytelling is really on point. Ira Glass is one of the producers on it, so
yeah.
it's just it's meticulously crafted. There's
yeah.
nothing really like dangling on the edges from it.
And it's a movie about comedy, but it's not just like a full blown comedy movie. Is the thing like it's?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's more of a dramedy than anything.
Yeah,
but and I think it was highly rated on Rotten Tomatoes. To my knowledge, if that does, if our it's a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. So if our review doesn't help, just go read the 112 reviews that gave it positive reviews. Anyway, it's a great film. And so what I've been watching, this isn't that much compared to some people I know, but I'm on like movie number 96 for this year. that I'm watching?
April 30th today.
Yeah, you can add that up of like how many movies per day.
You're 4 months in.
I'm 4 months in. I mean, it's not a movie.
You're third of the year.
It's not a movie a day. It's not that.
Yeah, sure.
But it's a little under that. And so here's the last great or the movie I just watched that hasn't come out yet. They'll come out soon that everyone should go see. Well, probably my recommendation at the end of the show is Baby Driver, Edgar Wright's new movie. Have you heard?
Yeah. I've heard about it. I'm so excited.
It was so good. It was so good.
Okay, I'm not going to try and explain what your face is right now on Skype, but
it was so good.
He really enjoyed it, everyone. That was his good face.
Thomas and I went to it, and because we had like a thing for USC where we got tickets to go to it, and like I think it was a press screening or something, and they only allowed like 20 people to actually go in that weren't press, and because we're USC, we got in before anyone else. The opening scene, the two opening scenes, I just go, shit. I was like, that's how you open a movie. Like, there's certain movies, like, when I watch it, I'm like, that is, like, the perfect beginning of this movie. Like, an example of it for me is Straight Outta Compton, where it's, like, Eazy-E is, like, he's in Los Angeles. Eazy-E's going to a house, think for, like, a drug deal. And then LAPD shows up. It's just, like, a brilliant beginning of that movie. It sets the entire tone. It's the same thing in Baby Driver. It sets the entire tone. It establishes your main guy, and it's just masterfully crafted. And I was just like, how he's on a whole nother level right now, like Edgar Wright. And I think it's Edgar Wright's most accessible film that he's done to this point, even though he's had like big hits. I think it's like Thomas said, Edgar Wright's voice is in it, but doesn't feel like your typical Edgar Wright movie. It's like Scott Pilgrim versus the World is like you're like quinted, like this is so Edgar Wright with like the comic book type panels, the quick visual comedy or whatever you have. Because I know Tony Zhao did the Every Frame Painting one on like Wright's visual comedy. That's all present here, but it isn't as, hey, look, it's an Edgar Wright movie. It's very subtle when he does it. And so it's great. It's great acting. It's a great soundtrack, too. Because it has a lot of music in it, if you've seen the trailer. What are you going to say? You had something to say at the same play.
All right. I mean, I had a joke I was going to call back, and you can cut this out. But it you make it sound like it's almost as if Wes Anderson evolved.
I don't know.
That's not fair, because I really like his work. But, you know, there is a sameness to all of his things that you...
No,
you would not mistake him for someone else.
Yeah, well,
but there, I can't think of one of his films where you think like, oh, he's really like moving up to another stage.
I think, and the people might hate me with this because I kind of agree with what your statement is about Wes Anderson, is that I feel like his movies are becoming the same style of movie over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go back to his earlier stuff, it still has that voice, but it feels different. If that makes sense. Like if you look at Rushmore and even Royal Tenenbaums, it still has that Wes Anderson voice that you see in Moonrise Kingdom and Grand Budapest Hotel, but it's done in a more accessible way, in my opinion. That's just me. I know people love him. I think he's great, but I think now we're getting to a point where it's like, oh, it's so Wes Anderson movie. But when you look at Rushmore or whatever, it's not really a so Wes Anderson movie, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm not really saying that to rain on him. It just, it sounds exciting. Like, I'm really excited to see the film,
man.
Because I'm interested when people play with their own style to kind of evolve it into a different stage.
Yeah, that I think he's matured as a filmmaker, and and this movie shows that. And I couldn't help but wonder what would have happened if he actually directed Ant-Man at some point. And Thomas did the same thing. He's like, I don't know what moment it was, but it was just like, man, if he did Ant-Man instead of like not dropping out, what could it have been like?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's a great film. Go check it out. I'm gonna go on the ledge and say this, and people might hate me for it. I think it's in the top two films I've seen this year, probably. Get Out and Baby Driver are like my top two films right now.
I could imagine some end of year list that have those films.
Yeah.
On. Yeah.
I think Get Out surpassed most of the, like, the best of films from last year for me. But anyway, but yeah, that's what I've, and besides other 97 movies I've been watching recently, that's one of them. But yeah, so let's go into our three topics that we have tonight. So we'll try to get to them all. Let's start with Ben's first, because Ben has so much.
Well, let's tease him, because I think people are going to be surprised by the sequence here. First topic is going to be about Facebook's new camera platform, which I think some people might sleep through. Or if you listen, you're going to be like, oh, there's really something cooking here that nobody's paying attention to.
Yeah.
Brandon's got breaking news, kind of. Do you want to do your breaking news first? What? Facebook thing can wait?
The writer strike stuff?
The writer strike.
I can talk a little about it. Thomas didn't want to talk about this in the show. He's like, because it just breaks his heart, is what he said. Because one thing that, too, that I said, too, is that we're all graduating from grad school and we're all looking for jobs. And it's hard to find stuff right now because of the writer strike. No one's really wanting to hire currently because they're afraid of what's about to happen. And depending on when this episode's released, we'll know for sure what's going to happen. Because we're recording April 30th, and the strike, if it happens, goes into effect at midnight tomorrow, is what it is. After 11:59, May 1st is when the strike starts to happen, if it happens. Right now, it looks like the AMPTP has offered. Okay, basic thing. Let's break it down of what's going on.
Break it down, Brandon.
Of what the writers are wanting. So, the WGA, Writers Guild Association, or Writers Guild of America, they are negotiating with the studios regarding healthcare and the profits that they're making. Last year...
Which is what that abbreviation was, the AM... That's the studios, basically.
Studios, yeah, it's the studios. And so the writers are wanting more money for their work and a better... And to make sure that the studios don't slash the healthcare plan, and hopefully they can get more out of it. Basically what's happening from the deal they made 10 years ago, most of the time when shows were coming out, they were 22 episodes. Drama, procedurals like Law and Order or House, they were all like 22 episodes a year, sitcoms, everything. Well, during this whole golden age of television, we're getting shorter seasons. We're getting like 10 episode seasons. Or sometimes even less. Like Game of Thrones is, I think, like seven or eight episodes this next season.
Yeah.
And so and then streaming, where you're getting like 10 episodes and they're dropping at one point. But the thing is that you're spending the same amount of work on those 10 episode seasons as you would be a 22 episode season. And some of those places have exclusive deals with those writers where they can't go and write elsewhere on shows.
Even if they only are working for like 6 months, they have to be on hold for the next 6 months, waiting to find out if they're going to be picked up for the next season.
Correct. And so,
which is crazy.
Yeah, which is crazy.
It's very crazy.
And so the other issue is that the writers get paid per episode. And so they're putting the same amount of work because of the shorter season runs, they're getting paid less. And so this past year, I believe the numbers were the studios had made more money than any other year before, but writers' salaries went down around 27% is what it was. And that's a big gap. And so basically the writers are wanting more money for their time because they're not getting paid, even though they're working the same amount of hours and they're being kind of held to these deals. And so they're wanting more money. And so what's going on right now is on the kind of the 11th hour, they're still negotiating today, even on a Sunday they negotiated. And basically what just recently happened was the studios offered a healthcare plan of like $86 million, I believe is what it is, which is
that all?
Let's see. Is now offering to increase employer contributions to the plan by more than $85 million over 3 years. That's up.
Boy, that is like chump change.
That's up from $60 million in its previous offer.
Just remember, like, well, I'm always anchored by this, but the numbers that are being spent on content, like Amazon, like $2 billion.
Yeah.
Netflix, $6 billion. You know, and not all of that's domestic. Not all of it's like WGA written shows.
Yeah.
But, you know, if say just a half, because I know a lot of the growth in Netflix is international, but say half is domestic, $3 billion on content, which some content needs writers.
Yeah.
$85 million for increased healthcare is a pittance. I'm kind of shocked that the WGA is entertaining such a number like that. That seems really...
Yeah. And so it's... And what's interesting is that Variety saying one thing and Deadline saying another. Like Deadline saying, talks are getting better. They're offering this. WGA seems happy or whatever. And then Variety's like, the captains are preparing to strike. They're telling their members to prepare. I was like, that is a completely different statement that's being made.
Well, I mean, they're supposed to be under a media blackout at this stage during the negotiations. So I imagine that some of these things are sort of like leaks from different people.
Yeah. And so basically the thing is that the WGA sent out for the union members to vote on whether or not to strike if they need to. 96.5% said yes to a strike,
which is a lot.
The most it's ever been, and it was
in like a free election, assuming there wasn't tampering with the vote.
Yeah,
and that's a joke.
The other thing is that I think the largest one last time was 90% with the last strike, so it's got close to 7%. It was also the highest voter turnout ever, with close to 70% of the members voting on it.
Who's not voting on that? I guess, like, are you so busy writing that you're like, nah, dog, I'm good?
They're just like, no, I'm not voting. To bring it, the context of it is that 10 years ago we had a strike. I was in high school when this happened, but I remember it happening. It went on for like close to, I think, four or five months, the last strike. And it was right before the new season started. So like everything just kind of stopped. And so the problem is right now is that studios are about to release their upfronts, which is basically saying to their advertisers, here's what we're showing this upcoming season to get advertising dollars to the thing. But the problem is that here's our shows. We have no writers for them. We don't know if they're going to happen, but please give us money to make these shows or to put your ads in our shows. So that, It's kind of the worst time, it seems like, for the studios for this to happen, because it's right before that. But neither one of them feel like they're budging. It's like everyone else, both places feel like they have the upper hand, and it's like playing chicken to see who's going to budge first, who's going to take the lesser deal. And because no one knew 10 years ago how big streaming would be at this time. No one knew we were about to go in this like golden age of television and realize, oh, wait, less episodes is better of TV. And so, it's going to be interesting because it will determine a lot of stuff, since like a lot of shows are about to start gearing up to start shooting, and they have a few scripts and plan or they're ready to go. But like you can't do five episodes and release it and then wait for the strike to end.
Some shows have done that though, right? I mean, they'll split seasons. I don't know. I mean, because like the quality has gone up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I could, you could imagine where you had like 15 scripts out of the 22 that you needed for some sitcom.
Yeah.
And you just kind of say, well, screw it. You know, we'll wing the last five.
Yeah.
And just have some people improv some, you know, some fart jokes. But I don't think that works if you have, you know, Breaking Bad level, you know, plots.
Yeah. And Film School Rejects, even though they're not really a competitor, but they're on Medium with us as well. we're not competing. We're not competing. Okay. Never mind.
Pick your enemies, Brandon. Pick your enemies.
Yeah, I know. But they did a great article on, I think it was One Perfect Shot, which is owned by them. They did an article about like the movies that were affected by the 07-08 strike, like the 2009
movies. Yeah, and I read that article. It's a great article.
It's a great article because and you're looking at a lot of movies that were in certain franchises, they're considered like the weakest movies in those franchises. And you're like, oh,
yeah,
the strike had something to do with that. I mean, it was,
yeah.
I mean, no matter how bad you feel, or what you feel about Transformers movies, Michael Bay's in the interview, he's just like, we didn't have a script. Like, we were just having to kind of make it up as we went. Or, yeah. And it was like...
which is different, which was his admission that they do it differently for the other
films. The other ones, yeah. And then it was X-Men Origins, Wolverine was like, they were, and then Star Trek, and then I think a few others. But they were like, it's not the only cause for it, but it is a big cause of why those movies were not higher in quality than they were. Star Trek is like, it's kind of surprising it did as well as it did, going through all it went through. So I mean, and the other thing too that I wanted to bring up too is a lot of movies and shows got canceled or completely because of the strike. So yeah, it's a big deal, and we'll see what happens within the next. When you're listening to this, you might already know what happens. But we'll find out soon. But anyway, let's go into your.
Those are the stakes. Those are the stakes.
Yeah, those are the stakes. It could prevent some of us from having jobs soon. But your turn, Ben. Do a more happy note, because that felt very depressing.
I have something. If you're listening to this and they went on strike, I have something you could learn about. Follow me? You know what I mean? Okay, so Facebook. Well, here, this is part of what made me think of it too, Brandon. You told me a story about how one of your professors was like, the company you should go work for and learn how to tell stories for the future is Snapchat.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. Correct.
And I mean, I'm old and a curmudgeon, and I kind of ridiculed that viewpoint. I understand why someone would say that.
Yeah.
But, you know, this idea that, like, whatever the new hot trend is, go chase it because that's where the gold is, you know? Yeah. Like, go do what the kids are doing. I don't know. But anyway, this is not really that same recommendation. But basically, I don't know if people were paying too much attention, but last week... Facebook had their big developer conference called F8, and their big announcement is, you know, basically they've been copying everything that Snapchat has, feature for feature,
yeah.
Almost by name. Like, they really have been shameless in a very just like ruthless, methodical way, because they're trying to crush them. They're kind of upfront about it. They're like, they are on a one-way ticket to crush Snapchat because they're their biggest competitor. They're their biggest threat at this stage. So anyway, they introduced this, what they're calling Facebook Camera. And the way that they're doing it differently than Snapchat is it's this developer platform. So they're making it open to anybody to develop lenses and like overlays over the camera, right? So all the demos are pretty frivolous. Downright
yeah.
almost useless.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm an old man. I was just like, I don't know why I need to do this. But then as I was thinking about it more, the technology about what they're doing, they showed how a lot of it's working, but they have all these computer vision algorithms that are basically able to detect what's in the frame. This is all happening in real time on your phone, like your mobile phone in your pocket. And in real time, it's able to detect when you... Their example was like showing the table in front of you with the food that you're eating. And they could detect, you know, the bowl in front of you. And it would know, the computer's able to detect it and say, that's a bowl. And it would notice the coffee cup and it would say, that's a coffee cup.
Yeah.
And also, and that's fine. So you have a kind of object detection. You can put names around it. That's fine. But it's also... detecting and building out a 3D model of what it thinks the depth of that space is. So this is a 2D lens that's on your regular phone, but it's able to basically figure out the plane of the table in front of you. So they're able to do things like have sharks swim around the bowl, 3D sharks, because they know that they're guessing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, this is all just a computer trying to figure out, but it's detecting that it's like, well, there's a bowl and there's a table and we see the shadow. And so I'm pretty sure that the shark should disappear as they pass behind the bowl.
Yeah.
Right. So it's really mind like my mind was kind of on the floor when I saw some of that, because the demos that I've seen previously are basically for post-processing, right? Yeah. That you would upload this to the cloud and it does, you know, and I say that, but then it's like Snapchat has been doing this to a certain extent, right? They've been doing face detection on your phone in real time.
Yeah.
And they put a dog face on you and the dog tongue comes out when your tongue comes out, you know? So they've been doing that. And that's been impressive for quite a while. That's still pretty amazing. But the thing that Facebook's kind of taking it to the next level is they're detecting other objects, not just faces.
Yeah.
They're able to get this kind of volumetric, you know, rendering of the space.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the tech, right? They're opening it up to developers.
Which is interesting to me, because, like, I mean, with Snapchat, they provide you with, like, this is what we have today. Like, this is the template or whatever. But you're able to develop your own is really interesting.
Right. And they've made, Snapchat has kind of gone the route of, like, well, sponsors can create custom lenses.
Yeah.
Right. And they actually, the same moment that Mark Zuckerberg was introducing this on stage, Snapchat introduced a feature called geo lenses, I think, where basically if you're in Washington, D.C., you get access to a special lens that's only available in Washington, D.C.
The thing is, they've been doing stuff like that where, like, you have filters on your phone. Like, if you're if you're in Santa Monica here in L.A., it'll show, like, the pier. You know, it's like Santa Monica Pier. It'll have the filter for it. So that's like, I guess it's new, but it's not a huge step forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and this is where I had Snapchat for a while and I got rid of it.
You never took pictures. You just texted on Snapchat is all you did.
I know. I just didn't. I didn't. It's not that I didn't get it. I didn't have a use for it. Like, I just... People sent me photos of nothing, and I was like, why is this happening? Why are you sending me photos of just, like, shoes and cars and bricks and, like, random things? And
this is a tangent, but because I remember you telling me this, what was the moment where you turned
The moment was, the photos disappear, right? That's the whole hook of the thing, right?
Yes.
And so I would take so long. I would get these alerts. This was happening where people were sending me stuff and it was nonsense. It was just meaningless garbage. And I would tell people that. I was like, why did you send that to me? So anyway, I would start getting these and I would stop looking at them, or it would take me a while. So I finally opened it up one day and I had gotten a photo from a friend who will go nameless here. He is a quasi-mutual friend of some of the people here. But anyway, he sent me a photo through his windshield, like a rainy windshield, and there was like a fire truck in the distance with its lights on. Basically, it just had the text on it that said fire truck. And that's all it was. And so I texted him, or, you know, I think I just texted. I don't think I sent a snap back. I think I just snapped with text, like, why did you send me this? And he responded, why did I send you what? Like, what are you talking about? Because it had already disappeared on his side. And that's when I knew it was just totally meaningless. Like, he didn't even remember what he had sent me. And when it finally, like, you sent me a fire truck. Why did you send me a fire truck? He's like, I don't know. I just saw it. It looked cool. I thought you'd like it. It was like, not his house is on fire, not like his neighbor is in trouble. It's just fire truck.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the fleeting mental farts of people just wandering through their day, just like fire truck.
Yeah.
Curb, cat, dog. I get it. I understand why some people want to do that.
Yeah.
I just don't want to be connected to people in that way. I want people to, like, process through things that are in their mind briefly before they try and share them with me. I want them to have some sort of, like, quasi-significance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, like, I understand. Anyway, so Facebook camera. Go back to that.
I'm an old man. I'm an old curmudgeon. So I deleted it. Yeah. So Facebook camera, they're doing all of that. They're doing the faces, the face detection. But okay, so when you really start to think about it, like basically all their examples are really direct copies of Snapchat.
Yeah.
Basically, like, look at this thing that you can do. They didn't say Snapchat right during the talk, but like, you can share funny faces with your friends, and it's like just like Snapchat.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's totally every example they gave was basically, this is a thing you can do in Snapchat. Now you can do it on Facebook. But their sales pitch is focused on the developer aspect. So it's going to be, there's going to be more of these. People can do whatever they want. They don't know what people are going to create.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like, well, why are you going to want to do this? Because number one, anything that you're, well, there's negatives to all this, right? Where this is their AR, this is like their real time, like Facebook Live. Like you could do this where you have like, you know, you can do polls now is one of the things they showed where that floats over the screen and say, do you want chocolate ice cream or vanilla ice cream? Like, which is better? You know, you can do these A/B.
Yeah.
You know, we could do it for this show, and it wouldn't be lame if we did it because it would be amazing. But this is what I started thinking about though. It rolled around in my head for a little bit, and I was like, you know what? If I wasn't such an old man, if I was like 14 years old, I would use this for filmmaking.
Yeah.
Right. This is when you think about it, because basically what it's doing, when you really see that what the technology is doing, because it's basically in private beta right now. So I requested an invite to write one of these lenses, but I haven't been accepted yet. And maybe it's because I say mean things about Facebook sometimes. But everyone should try and get in. Like, I think it's super interesting. It's not, you don't even really need that much code because they basically built up this whole framework where you tell it, like, when there's a face, do this thing, you know, show this thing on top of it, right?
Yeah.
But you could also have it do, my understanding is that you could also have it say, for example, whenever my dog is in the frame, make it rain, you know, like virtual fake rain,
yeah,
right? Or make it gloomy, or go a step further and say, like, think about it, create like special props for films where it's like, whenever this lightsaber-like object comes on film on screen,
light up,
create a lightsaber, right? So that's where my mind went, is like, this really, and you know, the big thing is like, it's designed mainly for like real time, and so I don't know, you'd probably have to kind of hack around to make it work,
yeah,
in post, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But anyway, like what I started thinking about is like this is one of the things where, like, okay, so this is not going to be to the level of like Game of Thrones or Star Wars or like top tier, you know, Transformers style effects, right? They're still going to be a little bit, they're designed to be goofy and kind of silly,
yeah,
but you could create them to be more realistic. I mean, Snapchat face detection is really impressive, and I think they're at the same level with Facebook. So that level of work is there. But you know, you just start thinking about like I think about a show like Sense8 where you have this like, you know, disjointed storyline all around the world. You have all these different characters. You know, if you were young, well, I don't know why I keep saying that. You can make movies at any age, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I could do this. Is what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm giving myself a pep talk, but basically, you know, if you could find a way to work with this thing, or maybe in the future it evolves, right? Because I basically what I realized is the technology is there now, and it's going to get better, obviously, as we go.
Yeah.
But if this is happening on your phone, right, this is a completely like consumer application where they're not thinking about filmmaking, really. That wasn't something that came up. They said, like, you could be creative with your friends, but there was nothing like, use this to tell stories, right?
Yeah.
But I think that either someone convinces Facebook to extend this out to be more like pro-friendly for filmmakers, or people just kind of find weird ways to work around the limitations.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like either hacky ways or whatever, or another company using similar technology, you know, puts this inside of a Red camera or inside of, you know, some other device, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the benefit of a mobile phone is the processor in it is insane. You know, like the this is probably boring to a lot of people, but basically the chips that Apple's designing for their phones is really kind of bananas when you compare it to like a laptop from 10 years ago, which, you know, when I was editing, like, again, as an old man, like, I was editing a Final Cut 3, you know, things took a long time to render, and it was just SD video. You know what I mean? This is, like, this is HD video in real time doing not just the recording of the video, but it's adding these real-time effects. So, anyway, I just think there's a lot of interesting stuff for people to think about. It's like, I think this might be one of the first steps where I think you could really see like a big change in the cost of specific types of content, right? Where if you're making, what, you know, what was the, I should have looked it up before, but the high school is, what was it called? Like VHS High School or whatever. It was the YouTube show where they basically had like all these visual effects on it. Or maybe it was just
Video Game High School.
Sorry. Video Game High School, right. Yes. And it went on for like many, many seasons or whatever. And as they kind of got bigger and bigger, they blew up, like, they kind of ramped up the visual effects to make it more and more complicated. Yeah. Like,
and they're still going too, by the way. Oh, no, okay. Or are they? I don't know. No, they're not. That IMDb lied. Okay, continue.
Anyway, I remember seeing like a behind the scenes thing from one of their later seasons. I never really watched the show, but I remember being interested in it just because they had started from basically, you know, they were like Drake. They started from the bottom, and then once they ramped up, they were spending money kind of like a big television show. I mean, they were blowing through like big visual effects budgets because they were doing people flying and flamethrowers and bombs and, you know, they were doing all these crazy things, but they still had to spend, you know, big league money to get that look. And I'm really curious. It's like, you know, if you were that YouTube show that's not trying to be, you know, the biggest thing ever, you're just trying to tell an interesting story with what's available to you.
Yeah.
You know, this wouldn't get you an Emmy, you know, this type of technology. But think about it, if you could get away with having interesting, like compelling to the story and relevant visual effects that take your story to another level that you can't get without visual effects. But you can do that all in real time, and you don't have to have a visual effects artist. You just buy, like, think about it. It's like a sticker pack.
Yeah.
Like, if someone made, like, a Star Wars sticker pack for Facebook camera, you could all of a sudden have lightsabers in your film with just holding a special, like, maybe it's just when you hold your hands together in clenched fist. Like, that's the level of detection that they have that's really amazing. It's kind of like a Kinect, where they can say, if you have one hand up with your palm open, they know that that's a special gesture. So, I mean, you get where I'm going with this, which is basically like you could have a level of production with way less cost, like a kind of mind-blowing shift.
Yeah.
It's really potentially revolutionary is what I'm saying. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought this is amazing.
And the term you're not using is augmented reality. That's what it is. It's AR. And I think I just read it's like the AR, it's AR Studio is the one that's like doing it.
Right. That's what you should sign up for. That's the tool that you use to build these filters.
And this is a question because I don't understand AR and VR that much.
Let's talk about it.
But I know enough to get by. But my question that I'm about to ask: do you think this has anything to do with Facebook buying Oculus a while ago? Does Oculus play into this at all in any way in the future? With VR.
Yeah, that's really interesting because they had a separate part of their announcement. A friend of mine from work went down to she went to the conference and they had a separate piece of this that was specific to VR, a different element altogether called Facebook Spaces, which is, you know, not a great name. It's kind of like Face Space, like they're just trying to confuse old people. Like really, like people older than me. But basically, that's a way where you can go into this. Like, basically, you can take a 3D, like a 360 bubble photo or video from a place, and then be within it.
And
basically, they give you these little Facebook Space avatar things that look kind of like Wii characters or like Xbox Live characters, if you've ever seen those, but you and your friends can get into this virtual space. on your Oculus, or I think that, you know, you can run it on your phone with a little head mount thing. You can mount your phone to your face, people. This is going to be great. And yeah, you know, it's super creepy. My friend who tried it said that it was interesting, but this is the thing that I think Facebook is, I don't want to, they're not oblivious, because I think they're a really well-run company. Like, they're clearly, like, delivering interesting things.
Yeah.
I say that with a straight face. Like, I think that you compare them to Twitter, like, Twitter doesn't seem to know what Twitter is, and Twitter has been around for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
Snapchat, I think they know who they are. And anyway, Facebook has delivered a lot of things in a pretty short period of time.
Yeah.
15 years, basically, you know, give or take a couple years there.
From start to now, not just like in its prime.
Genuinely, yeah, like, they started at the bottom below Drake and then came up to now. They weren't in a children's television show. Anyway, the problem with the VR thing is that they record everything that you say and do within that space. And basically...
Ooh.
Yeah, like there's a lot of privacy concerns about that. And then the other big thing is, like, VR is still in its infancy, you know, and I don't know that people want to do this. Maybe they do. You know, I'm probably not the person to know.
Yeah.
But based on my friend's reaction, it's like, no, probably not. You know, there's a group of people who will use it. But I think there's just too many. For me personally, it's like, do you want to enter a space with your friends where you don't have any privacy? You know what I mean? Like, you get the service for free.
Yeah.
I mean, Skype is free. We're using that now. But, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. You know, specifically for advertising, if Skype was running ads right now, uh-huh, talking about Facebook Live or something like that, like as a pop-up ad, I would be not into that, you know? They could totally do that. They could analyze the things that we're talking about and show us relevant ads, but they don't do that because that's super creepy. That's why you don't do that. It's super creepy.
It's like Minority Report.
It is like Minority. So that's kind of, so people commented about the difference, the distinction there between the VR and the AR,
uh-huh,
and the fact that it is interesting that Facebook bought Oculus to be in the VR game, but they're clearly still potentially putting even more emphasis now on AR, which is where some people, you know, Google had Google Glass, and Apple hasn't released anything, but Tim Cook keeps talking about, mm-hmm, how interesting AR is, and they're looking in the space. And so the speculation is that the next iPhone is going to have basically some sort of AR component to it.
Yeah. So with games are getting towards AR. I mean, Pokemon Go is an AR game, and you'll probably start seeing more and more of those pop up. They're on that level of a Pokemon. I mean, I know I have friends that still use that game, because it was
well, it's not a drug, Brandon. It's just a game.
But the thing is, because Emerald Thomas was like, it was big for for 2 weeks, and then now it died down. It has just its consistent fans right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, yeah, Thomas was like, did it for a week. He's like, this is going to change the world. He's like,
yeah,
I'm just seeing the same five people over and over again on my morning run. I'm done with this game.
Yeah.
So it depends. Anyway, but no, we'll see more and more of that. And yeah, I think there's more of a, personally, there's more of a future with AR than VR. And I think that's just because the tech really isn't there. Like, for example, I had, for one of our classes, we had to pitch a business or something to expand on for a company. And everyone in my group was like, we should do VR. I was like, everyone's going to say VR, but like none of us really completely understand this yet. And because it's still kind of, like you said, it's in its infancy. And a lot of companies, like, they put so much money into it, they can't really do anything else because they have no... They're not making any money off it. Does that make sense?
I mean, you only have so much money to invest in R&D, basically.
Yeah. And so, but like literally, I think we had 8 groups and 4 people pitch VR, and it was the same thing over and over again. Like there wasn't anything changing, and someone was like, "We'll create a new software for VR," and of course, one guy is a big VR guy goes, "That's impossible because like you're not a tech company, so I don't know how you can create a new software when like even I think Oculus was based off like a Google Samsung thing is what I heard, or a certain AR or VR thing VR device was based off Google Samsung device. Like they're basically." He's there reusing the same tech over and over again.
Yeah. Basically it's such a complicated thing.
Yeah.
Specifically the hardware
yeah.
is so monstrously complicated compared to just even, you know, like computers and iPhones that we have today are
yeah.
impressive.
Yeah.
But the things that are happening for VR to make the hardware actually work
yeah.
is really, really insane. It's pushing the limits of what's basically computationally possible at that speed because it's such a high frame rate and then it's different for each eye.
Yeah.
So it's just crazy. But yeah, the software would be a massive, like, it would be a massive undertaking. I think anyone who says that they're going to make a new software is maybe underestimating the expense.
They were business students, and I was just like, I'm not a tech guy, but I know that's not possible right now. Like,
well, no, I mean, you know, everything's possible, but
I know it's a lot easier said than done. If we'll create a new software, yeah. but we're not a tech company. And then he's like, "Oh, we'll hire people."
Yeah, well, yeah,
we'll hire people for it.
Yeah, I mean that works. you know, I mean, you know, Sony has their own, you know, PlayStation system, and you know, it's totally doable, right? I mean, you can create your own ecosystem and marketplace and everything.
Yeah.
But you know, if you're a studio, right? Because that was the assignment, right? Is that you guys were basically reviewing this as if, like, if you were a studio head, what would you do? Why would Fox or even Disney, like, why would Disney have a VR thing, like a VR marketplace for Disney things? I don't know. There's a lot of interesting things to play with, but you know, I think the augmented reality stuff is really interesting because
you know
Facebook is motivated by you know, I hope it's not too nefarious, but basically because they are running detection algorithms over everything that appears in the frame, like, I mean, we were joking at work basically about, you know, if you turn it on in your house, starting to see ads for like, basically like aggressive ads that are like, you know, man, you have a really rundown sofa, buy a new sofa today. basically like, you know, trash talking your living conditions based on what it's seeing.
Minority Report. Again,
that's not what they're doing.
Again, it's Minority Report.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, they could potentially, yeah. anyway, they're not actively planning to do that, but
they could.
Yeah.
They could.
I think, yeah. And the thing is, you know, they would be storing that data.
Yeah.
I think that's different. I mean, really, you know, I'm kind of surprised too by, like, you know, they've offered, you've seen this for a while, right? Where years and years and years ago, they started offering unlimited photo uploads to Facebook. And this was at a time when people were paying money for like Flickr or other services online to store your photos, right? Yeah. Yahoo was a company, kids. That was a real place. But, you know, they started giving away for free, and you have to think, like, well, wait a minute. Why is it free? Why is it free? And it's like, oh, once, you know, and it's not all nefarious, but it's like, once they have all of your photos, like, there is a level of analysis and, like, you know, basically they can do any number of things to those photos that you may not have known about or intended back when you uploaded them in 2007, you know, 10 years ago. But they could, you know, they're running face detection over every photo that's on their platform. And so they know every person that's in every photo that's been tagged and most people have been tagged, you know, so they, you know, they have almost 2 billion users worldwide, but like, think about the number of people on earth who have been tagged in a Facebook photo and you'd probably cover more than 2 billion people, right? Because you could tag, Well, I guess technically to tag them. Anyway, technically they have to be a member. But
correct.
Anyway, they're not totally Minority Report.
Yeah.
But I think people should be a little cautious in their usage when they think about, like, why is this set up like this?
Yeah.
You know? Anyway.
So, I going back to the Facebook camera, I do think that could be an interesting thing for young filmmakers. I mean, you're kind of saying in a similar thing what you're describing, kind of how DSLRs were when they first came out. It's like,
yeah, I think so.
Or digital cameras in general, is that it's not perfect, but it's something new and different. And I mean, if you look at like Chuck and Buck, it's like, it's not a great film, but it's like, it's a different style and it has a texture to it that fits with how it's being shot.
Well, and that's the thing, is like, you would have to find the right material that works within the constraints, because there's a ton of constraints. I mean, to the point where I haven't figured out what I would do, right, if I had this, because I'd want to play with it. But, you know, you can imagine, like, I think, like, just as people made fun of DSLRs early on for being, you know, a very kind of like, you know, it was a look that you could spot really quickly. You could, if you were a trivial viewer, you could go, oh, that's DSLR, I'm not going to watch this.
Yeah.
Right. But that's incredibly dismissive of what could be taking place.
Exactly.
You know, of the story being told. And so I think these effects early on will be kind of, you know, the initial like push of the whole platform that they're making is these trivial, you know, like rainbows and pony, you know, but maybe you make like a My Little Pony style thing. I don't know. Like, you could make some sort of weird, dreamlike drug-induced state that makes sense only in this platform.
Or you just make kids programming through Facebook.
That's not a bad idea. I mean, you could imagine like a Michel Gondry style, dreamlike thing. Yeah, I'm saying it. Be Kind, Rewind, but with more drug induced like AR, you know, visual effects.
It's possible.
Anyway,
I
think it's something to play with, because just like DSLRs were ridiculed and digital cameras were totally inferior in every way to film cameras. More or less, I mean, if the iPhone had come out, you know, immediately, if the iPhone we have today had been in the running for the debate, like, people would just be like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Yeah. For like $700-$800, I can shoot in like above, you know, I can basically shoot 4K image stabilized. Like, you know, you can go down the list. It's crazy. And it's not a competition anymore. I mean, people still shoot film if they have money to waste, basically. I mean, no, seriously. You have to kind of like push for it, because it's a waste. You don't need it. Yeah. So I do wonder, like, if you're in the visual effects field, and there are people who rotoscope out like cables, fly cables for people being like, you know, superheroes that are flying through the sky.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, if someone's phone is now capable of, every time you extend one arm up, you know, all of a sudden that person is flying through the sky or something. You know what I mean? Like, and you can do that. And I'm not saying like, you know, you have to write this fancy thing. It's like someone could write that filter, and then every 13-7, you know, every 5-year-old kid around the planet could make a movie about a superhero, as long as you extend your arm into the pose and it recognizes it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's powerful. That's a really powerful potential.
You'd just, you'd have people kind of just trying it out and finding out. Again, with DSLRs, that was the same thing. It's that DSLRs weren't made for video. They were made for photography. And they're like, oh, wait, this actually has a really good movie function. Let's try to make movies with it. And you just started, like, discovering it that way. And now, like, DSLRs are becoming advancing every year. And then when comparing digital to film, this is a completely different topic. But when you're looking at digital, there's a good video on Vimeo. I think it's Royal Ocean Label Society talking about in praise of 16mm is what it's called. But it's showing that 16mm has a very different feel than digital. But when you showcase digital versus 35mm, it's very hard to tell the difference. Like, it's getting to the point where it's almost impossible. when you're comparing it digital to 16 millimeter, it's different. You can kind of tell. But when you're looking at 35 millimeter, which is mainly used for the big films, and then like right. the Alexa, you can't really tell the difference. And so, yeah, digital cameras are becoming more and more advanced, and DSLR is becoming more and more advanced. If you look at like the Sony A7S or these other cameras, so Facebook camera will probably could, if people start to discover what you can do with it, it'll follow that same path probably. And it like
yeah, I think your path is really similar in that it's not intended for filmmaking right now.
No,
that's what I was surprised by when I saw the. Well, I didn't immediately think of this, right? I mean, I thought of like, wow, I really don't care about putting dolphins jumping over my cereal bowl. You know what I mean? It's just not something I'm going to do.
Yeah.
But then as I thought about it, I was like, you know, if you just find a way to twist this just a little bit,
yeah,
subvert it into this other thing, like you could have some really interesting storytelling going on. And in a way where, you know, like I said, I think the real power is like, whereas DSLRs, you know, you still had to go buy one.
Yeah.
You know, you still had to go, you still had to have some money. You still had to have a grand or $2,000 or $3,000 or whatever. You still had to have a computer to edit it on.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, mind you, this is in comparison to, you know, $10,000 cameras or $100,000 cameras. So it was a step change down,
yeah.
significantly cheaper. But with this specifically targeted at mobile phones, almost everybody has one.
Yeah.
You know? And people are already using them to tell amazing stories. But the key is that just like people use filter, you know, Instagram filters and people use Snapchat filters and sticker packs and everything, these things are made by like one person or a group of people mm-hmm. and then immediately available to everyone on the planet
yeah.
who has access to the internet and a phone capable of doing this. And so I just think you could see a really interesting spark of different filters that are targeted at filmmakers
mm-hmm.
That people grab onto, and that it might be a dollar. It might be free. I don't think you can charge for these filters
yeah.
specifically. Like you only get like, it only shows like your name when you post the video or something silly. Like the problem is I don't know that Facebook knows what they want to do with this is the real problem.
No.
I don't know that they figured out where they want to go.
No.
So we're going to see if they're the ones to do this, but
yeah.
the tech is there. If someone else does it,
yeah.
it's going to be
yeah.
a big change.
Yeah, I don't think they have to determine where they want to go with it. I think with Facebook, they're just releasing it out into the world and say, you determine where you want to go with it. Like, do you want to make films with it? Do you just want to just make posts for your friends? You basically,
yeah.
you do it first, and we'll try to help you get to where you want to go, if that makes sense. So they'll look
totally, yeah.
they'll look at what people are doing and go, oh, there's a market here, there's an audience here, let's give them more to do with, because I mean, hell, we're not losing money off this, especially if they're developing it themselves sometimes. I mean, yeah, they don't have much to lose with that, I don't think.
I think it's purely just a question of focus about whether
yeah.
whether or not they care enough, you know, because
yeah.
they have billions of people to care about, but the number of people who are going to make these films are going to be
yeah.
more limited, but you know, they would be viewed on the platform, you know, so it,
yeah.
it's going to be interesting to see what they, you know, maybe I'm crazy, maybe it's not even possible yet with the studio, we'll see, because it's still, like I said, it's still private beta, but it'll be, you know, I'm sure we'll
yeah.
be talking about it more over the next couple of years.
Yeah, but again, like what you said, like Facebook started 15 years ago and look how far they've come. And really not just that, but social media in general and technology in general. So
yeah.
who's to say that where Facebook camera's at in just 3 years? I mean, Snapchat wasn't even really big. Snapchat, I caught wind of when I was a senior in college, like 3 years ago. Like, so 5 years ago, Snapchat really wasn't a thing. And now it's becoming where it's fighting with Facebook. So, I mean, it'll slowly start. Yeah, some things will start to change for sure. And yeah, we shall see where it goes. I don't think we can get into our other topic, Ben.
I don't either. It's late. I've got an article that I'm writing on this, so I'm okay with saving it.
Yeah.
It's not urgent.
No.
I'm going to go ahead, and just because people who made it this far are wondering, what was the third one going to be? It was going to be about Netflix.
Because what else can you talk about?
I feel like I shouldn't be surprising to anyone who's listened to the podcast.
But it's a good one. It's a good topic about
it
Netflix.
It is a good one.
Because
it is a good one.
It's almost like Ben's come around a full 180 since the first time he brought up Netflix on the show, which was.
Oh, that is a good tease, Brandon. That is actually this is true. I would own up to that. Yeah.
It's a complete 180 from the very first episode of our show.
You guys are getting to witness an evolution in my thinking in almost real time.
And
it's kind of shocking.
And hopefully you don't have to wait a month for it. That's the big thing. Hopefully it's like in a week or two.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
So Ben,
I'll get the article written too.
Yeah, get the article written. That'd be great for like a good jumping point for a lot of us.
Have so many words, people. So many words.
At least 2,000. So Ben. So off to end the show. What are your recommendations for people, for the listeners?
I would stick by what I just saw. I mean, on Letterboxd, I made Don't Think Twice one of my favorites.
Oh, wow.
It's maybe a little early. I thought about it as I did it. I was like, that's very early. This is, that was a first date. I should at least watch it one or two more times. But I really think it just hit all the right notes for me. It's just beautifully crafted. I hadn't updated my favorites in a while, so
yeah,
I could very easily see myself swapping it out for like Short Term 12 or something that I love even more.
Yeah.
But the other recommendation, by the time this podcast comes out, we will be very close to the release of season 2 of Sense8. I am super excited. I know no one else cares. I don't know how popular it is amongst the people, Brandon, but I have one friend at work who loves it, and we talk about it, and our eyes go like saucer size because we're just like, can you believe it?
I gotta be real. I think you might be one of the only two people I know that actually likes the show or watched it fully. I'm not sure.
I think it's great.
I'm just gonna be real.
No, that's fine.
I'm looking more on. When was the last season or the first season of it?
It ended a while ago. I think took a little bit to renew it, and I think they also had some like kind of production ish issues.
Yeah.
But they did a Christmas special, that they released at Christmas, which was pretty good. It was a way to kind of tie things over.
Yeah.
They actually did a really strange thing that I'm not excited about for season 2, but they had an issue with one of the actors and they just straight like they just swapped them. But they had a moment. I mean, apparently it was like mid-production, like crisis replacement sort of thing.
Yeah.
But they have this scene in the Christmas special where it's like his friend is like, boy, you're looking different. And he's like, new haircut. And then they just move on.
No.
Yeah. He's just like, new haircut. And it's the sort of thing where it's like cheeky, kind of. But I mean, that's the problem with the series is that it is so grand in scale that like any one of these actors could leave or whatever. And you're stuck in this place where it's like, well, it's not just like a sitcom where like, you can just say like, well, they were in a car wreck, like it's kind of important that they're all still like put together. So anyway, they just swapped him out for a different guy and he like isn't really as interesting and his accent isn't the same. And like, he doesn't really look like him. You know what I mean? Like it's close, but it's not that close. I don't know. It's weird. It's kind of a disappointing aspect of it, but I don't know how they produce it. I've said that before, but I just don't know how they fly around the world with all these people and do it at a budget that Netflix agrees to.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine the cost of it because it's not like they have big name actors.
Yeah.
But they are constantly having these like group scenes where like everybody's in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And then, all of a sudden everybody's in Africa and everybody's here and everybody's there. Everybody's in India.
Yeah.
Everybody's in Germany. You're like, dude, these are not like sets.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of them are exteriors. They have these helicopter shots where they're not just showing you like we're in an alley in Berlin. It's like, no, this is like us running through the streets of Berlin with five different people. It's crazy. I don't know how it happens, but that's what I love about it. It's just so unbelievable in that it exists.
Yeah.
Brandon, what would you recommend to people?
What am I recommend? I'm not gonna, or Baby Driver for one, but I'm not gonna, I've talked a lot about that. I'm gonna,
yeah, when can we see it?
Let me see, because we saw it early, June 28th.
Release date, June 28th? Yeah. Brandon. We have to wait so long.
So I'll have to remind you come June. One movie that I can recommend for you to go watch, not in theaters anymore. It came out 2 years ago now. I think it's topical because of the directors. A movie called Mississippi Grind with Ryan Reynolds and Ben Mendelsohn. And great little film. Have you not seen it, Ben?
No, but isn't it like their gambling thing?
They're gamblers, and Ben Mendelsohn is this gambler in Iowa who's like really in debt, and he meets Ryan Reynolds, who's this lucky gambler where he doesn't care if he wins or loses, and for some reason, because he doesn't care, he always wins. Like, he just goes with he just goes with his gut feeling. And so Mendelsohn decides, like, hey, let's go on a road trip down New Orleans and like hit up all the casino towns and casino like riverboats and just like make a shit ton of money and do all that. It's a really good, like, right. It's like, it's a road trip movie, and it's kind of a buddy movie, but it doesn't, it goes against the cliches of it, I think. It's some of Ryan Reynolds' best stuff. And it's also set in the South. So it's like it's going to Memphis, it's going to New Orleans. They shot a good bit of it in Alabama, actually, in Mobile.
Oh, wow.
But why I'm bringing it up is because it was directed by Anna Boden and Ryan Fleek. Or Flick, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name.
I don't know.
Why I'm bringing them up is because they were just hired recently to direct Captain Marvel through Marvel Studios, starring Ben Gurt's favorite actress, Brie Larson.
The Brie Larson!
And they've also done Half Nelson, It's Kind of a Funny Story, and Sugar. So kind of these like independent movies, or small independent movies, sometimes dramedies. And now they're doing Captain Marvel. And so that's one good thing why I like when studios like that bring in like younger, independent, like lesser known directors, because we can find their previous work and kind of showcase those smaller films. So Mississippi Grind, I really enjoyed, really loved, and hopefully is streaming somewhere. And it was through A24, which they're doing really great stuff these past few years, and they just released Moonlight, Oscar-winning movie. They've only been releasing movies since 2013, so, and they've released a lot of great stuff. So yeah, Mississippi Grind.
They're the focus of our time. When focus, at least for me in college, focus was all that, and now they're not.
I would even say they're more the Weinsteins of our time.
Oh, Brandon. You're going back to like Goodwill Hunting
Weinstein, like Weinstein, like of independent cinema. Like, I don't know if I'd say focus, just because A24, like the problem is they don't have enough money right now. So like when they're backing a movie, they can really only back like one movie. They can't really back multiple movies, if that makes sense, like a Weinstein or like a studio. So that was the problem. Yeah. They had a lot of great films this year, but they could only really back Moonlight. I mean, thing is, what people talk about is that they had Moonlight, which had a bunch of Oscar nominations and wins, and they had 20th Century Women, which was nominated for, I think, Best Original Screenplay. The Lobster was nominated for Best Original Screenplay, and they had movies like The Witch and Green Room and Swiss Army Man and American Honey. Like, they had a lot of great stuff. So they'll slowly grow over. I mean, this year alone, about 20 releases.
That's a pretty big slate.
It's a pretty big slate for an independent company. And they just recently released Free Fire, the Ben Wheatley movie, which also stars Brie Larson. But yeah, so that's my recommendation, Mississippi Grind. Ben's recommendation is Don't Think Twice. And was it there? That was it, right? There wasn't.
I'm good.
And Kendrick Lamar. I don't remember. And Kendrick Lamar's new album.
DNA.
Anyway. Also make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes, make sure you write us a review, give us a rating. That's how we hear from you guys and try to get better on the show. Make sure you follow us on Medium. We have a lot of great articles up there, trying to get back into it. It's just been a crazy few weeks. I'm excited to see Ben's article when it happens. He's writing.
It's gonna be epic.
He's finally writing again. It's amazing.
It is kind of a big deal for me personally as well.
It's great.
I don't want to say I have the same level of enthusiasm as Brandon, but it is kind of like, wow, I remember what words that are not code look like.
And then make sure you follow us on iTunes. Or sorry, follow us on Twitter at Cinemation Show.
I think people are up with the times. They've got us.
And like on Facebook, you never know, Ben. You never know.
Search for us on the Google.
Script Notes always does it. I mean, we might as well do it.
All right.
All right,
Brandon,
guys.
It's been good.
Thank you guys for listening. Hope you listen to more episodes soon. Bye.